Okay, friends, I just watched Greta Gerwig's Barbie movie last week for the first time. I know I'm behind on this, but my episode last week for International Women's Day reminded me that I still needed to watch it. So listen in today as we chat about my thoughts not only on the Barbie movie, but Barbie as a whole. Well, hey there, friend, and welcome to the Joyful Flamingo podcast. I'm your host, Emily Schreiber, and I am obsessed with empowering women to tune into themselves, to zoom in on their own well-being, so in turn they can lead their most vibrant, aligned, and joyful lives. I want to create a tsunami of self-discovered, self-loved, and self-understood women to show up in this world unapologetically and joyfully, and to pass the torch on for generations to come. If any of that feels aligned with your vibe, stick around. I'm so glad you're here. Now, let's go find our joy. Hey, 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 joyful flamingo flock, and a good day to ya. How is it nearly mid-March already? I'm so confused. I feel like I blinked and 2 seconds ago it was Christmas. For those of you that live in Canada, and specifically Ontario, it's March break for the kids. And so if you're a parent, that may mean that you've been home with your kids for a few days so far. How are you doing? You're at hump day, which means you've made it halfway through. You can do it. You can do it. You've got all my love. You've got my support. I want to start and share a review of the pod on this fine, fine day. Now, this is a unique name. 500SB500 says, this podcast is something moms can look forward to, learn from, and feel welcomed by. Emily is such a natural behind the mic and has a wonderful way of bringing laughter, joy, and relatable content to people's lives. I'm so excited for what she has in store for us as more episodes roll out. Love the female empowerment vibes. Oh, I love it. Thank you, 500SB500. Truly, you guys know this, and I say I'm a broken record, but it really means the world to me when people share what's on their heart and when they do that on the show's platform on Apple Podcasts. Of course, we're on other platforms as well, but that's where the meat and the potatoes go in terms of ratings and reviews. And it really just helps us get the show out there. So thank you so much for taking the time to do that. If you haven't yet left a rating or a review, do me a favor, go give me a gifty and go onto Apple Podcasts to do that for me this week. I would be like forever and always grateful, as I already am for you. As you know, this month is Women's History Month, and last week we celebrated International Women's Day. Even though I got the wrong day, oh my goodness, what a, you may have seen on my stories, but I feel like I have to address it here for anybody who doesn't follow me on social media, but follows me on the pod. On the podcast drop last week on Wednesday, I was like, Happy International Women's Day. How amazing that it's on a Wednesday, that it's on a new drop day for the Joyful Flamingo. It feels serendipitous. And I went on and on and on and on. And then one of my beautiful flockies was like, I love the vibes, but you're a couple days early. And I was literally shocked. I was like, wait, what? This is the wrong day? This is not right? And then I looked it up and it wasn't. And I was like racking my brain. I was like, I swore it was March 8th today. What is going on? And then it came to me and I was telling my mom about this. When I map out and schedule what the pod's going to look like, I do it for quarters. So like 12 weeks of the year, right? That just allows me to do it at a time where I'm in my flow and my, you know, generally my follicular or my ovulation phase. And I like just get into a flow and I can map out a bunch of ideas, at least in concepts, for the episodes that are going to be launching within a larger chunk of time. When I was arranging what March was going to look like, that was back in December, which would have been 2023. So that's the key part of the story. But basically what happened was I went to Google and was like, what day of the week is International Women's Day 2023? Instead of what I should have done is, like, I know International Women's Day is always March 8th. So what I should have just done was like gone to the calendar and figured that out. But anyways, I put it into Google, and of course, because I wrote 2023, it gave me Wednesday, March 8th, which is interesting in and of itself because it kind of is a little bit off skew because of the leap year as well, because generally that would mean that this year it would be on a Thursday in 2024, but it's not. It was Friday of this year. Anyways, what happened was I saw Wednesday, March 8th, and I ran with it. I like put it all over my schedule of this quarter, the first quarter for 2024. I was so excited that it landed on a Wednesday. I was like, this is perfect. And I never really thought much about it after that. But then I thought to myself, no, it's really weird that I didn't catch that when I was doing like all my fact checking and when I was doing my research. Like, how did I not catch that? And then I realized it's because of my personality. And my personality is that I will literally write that it's 2023, probably until July, because I have always done that, even since I was a kid. The amount of times I've written 2023 already in this year and I've had to cross it out and put 2024 is miraculous to me, especially considering the fact that I journal every day. So you would think that I would get into a habit. No, Emily, it's 2024. When I was doing all my fact checking, I remember looking it up, but I probably put, again, International Women's Day 2023. Oh my gosh. So here I was showing up on socials and all over the place being like, oh, happy International Women's Day. Like just so excited by it. And it was not the vibe. It was not the vibe. So anyways, it was actually on Friday of last week. I hope you had a great day. That's a little funny, relatable story. Does anybody else do that? If you're like nodding along, you're like, yeah, that's me. I write 2023 until the end of time, until basically 2024 is over. And then I got to start writing 2024 in replace of 2025. Anyway, let's get to it. This whole month is Women's History Month in the month of March. And so last week's episode, I talked a little bit about women who accomplished firsts for the female kind. And one of them was Greta Gerwig, because her movie Barbie experienced the biggest debut in sales of a film directed by a woman. So I mentioned that I actually hadn't seen the movie yet in last week's episode, and I got so many messages from you guys that were like, oh my gosh, you need to see it. How have you not seen that movie yet? You're so far behind. So I was like, okay. All right, I hear you. And then also it kind of catapulted my idea to do an episode on this, because about a month ago, my dad actually was the first person who told me that there's a specific section of the movie that he thought would be perfect for an episode chat. Then insert me at the end of last week, finding the time to watch the movie at night so I could see what all the fuss was about. So I did that. I watched it for the first time last week. But before we dive into the movie, I really want to chat about my thoughts on Barbie overall, because they're complicated. Does anyone else have a complicated relationship with Barbie? I was born in 88, which means that was a prime time in history for Barbie. The best-selling Barbie of all time was actually released in 92. So that was when I was 4, and I was likely just starting to play with toys like Barbie, right? That's when a lot of us, I feel like a big portion of our flockies here are kind of within the ages of 30 to 45. So I feel like a lot of us would have been playing with them in that time. The most popular Barbie was released in 1992. It was called Totally Hair Barbie. Did anyone have one of these? And it still holds the most popular Barbie ever sold. She was the one that had super long tresses that you could brush and take care of. There were probably clips and like accessories that went into it. Really, really, really long hair. And I don't remember having her, to be honest. Truthfully, I don't really remember playing with Barbies all that much. I don't have these like vivid memories of my time with that doll like many women seem to. Well, I have one distinct memory of being at a friend's house who had this gigantic collection of Barbies, and we kind of just played with them all day. But I wasn't the girl that was obsessed or anything with Barbies. Not that I can recall. Now, watch, my mom's going to listen to this and she's going to be like, of course you were. But I don't have those super fond memories with Barbie. So when I started having kids and I had my first daughter, Barbie wasn't a thing that I really thought about buying for her, just simply because I didn't have a lot of amazing memories attached to it. But I think I also consciously, but also subconsciously, kind of always had this idea in my mind that Barbie maybe symbolized an idea of perfection and a kind of shallow representation of women that didn't really seem healthy to me. So I think I actually kind of wanted to steer clear from them for my kids, because that was kind of what I had in my brain. But I really started to realize the intense duality of this doll about a year and a half ago, when my oldest got a set of two Barbies for Christmas from a relative, and the ones that were given to her really embodied female professionals. You know, one was a vet, the other was a doctor. They were also really diverse, the two that she received. One was short, white, blonde hair, big hips, larger thighs than I remember my previous Barbie knowledge, you know, having. And one was the exact opposite, tall, dark skin, thin, an amazing fro. I remember thinking, oh, wow, these are representations of women that I don't remember seeing as a kid in the Barbie world. So I thought to myself, okay, this is different than what I remember Barbie symbolizing. And I thought, okay, there's definitely some sort of dichotomy here. It's this fine line between this idealized femininity that can promote low self-confidence, self-judgment, unrealistic expectations placed on women. Also, this doll that was actually originally created in the late 50s to allow girls to envision their future as adult women beyond motherhood, beyond, you know, through the eyes of a caretaker. Because before Barbie, a lot of what small girls were playing with were these baby dolls, right? That they just had to assume the role of motherhood. So I thought that's really cool too, that Barbie's offering this place of these girls can envision themselves as adult women outside of just taking care of others, basically. There was something really empowering about that. So here I am, 35, still left with this very polarizing dichotomy in my own brain about Barbie through one single doll. And I guess what I'm saying is Barbie and I have a complicated relationship, and I'm sure that it is the same for many people. There are two sides to the coin, and I think I'm still trying to work through my feelings. The reason I'm telling you this is because the way that I get into the movie, it's through those eyes, through a complicated lens of how I feel about Barbie as a whole to begin with. But listen, Flockies, you all know I'm an advocate for women's well-being, right? That's what we stand for here at the Joyful Flamingo. That's what I've envisioned when I think about this brand, this podcast. A lot of what I've learned and what I talk about here is self-taught, and I feel like I have to say that. A lot of it is still opinion-based. Yes, I took one women's study course in university, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I'm not an expert in the patriarchy by any means. I'm not, you know, super well educated in some of the areas that maybe I'm going to talk about today. So today is really just an opinion piece. It's like thoughts from my brain. And some may be really well thought out, some may be more spur of the moment, and I'm not claiming to be spitting truth or trying to influence you to believe any certain thing. Today, really what you're getting is an opportunity to be like a fly on the wall in my brain. Oh, good luck to you. As I watched the movie for the first time through that kind of complicated relationship with Barbie lens. Maybe it will spark thoughts in your own head. Maybe it intrigues you enough to watch the movie yourself if you haven't yet. Maybe you disagree with everything that I'm going to say and you want to start a conversation about it. What I want you to know is all of these options are welcome, especially since we are in Women's History Month and conversations about this kind of thing are so important. One of the first things that stood out to me in the first few minutes of the film was the introduction of the Midge character. So Midge Barbie. And if you don't know, Midge was a Barbie originally made to be like stereotypical Barbie's best friend back in the 60s. So she was created with softer features, red hair, a face full of freckles, that kind of thing. And then in the early 2000s, Midge actually made a reappearance in a family line for Barbie with the Allen doll. So if you've watched the movie, that'll be funny to you. She was sold as a pregnant woman. So Midge was this pregnant woman Barbie that also had an accompanying baby and a removable womb, which is actually really cool. Here's the interesting part to me. She was discontinued. And there were two big reasons, apparently, for this. The first is that parents were up in arms thinking that the Midge Barbie was promoting teen pregnancy. The other was that originally she wasn't made with a wedding ring painted on her finger, which, you know, at the time was super inappropriate. So it was the 2000s. So that's just like really fascinating to begin with when you think about it, right? Mattel just pulled the pregnant Midge. They just discontinued her and returned her to being just Barbie's best friend. And this is really interesting to me. Basically, women literally make the earth go round with our ability to childbear, right? It's our superpower, but also the most natural thing our bodies can do as well. And yet, in the 2000s, it was still too controversial for society to embrace a doll that represents so much of the population in a very heroic way, in my opinion. Mattel's response action was basically out of sight, out of mind, like, let's get her off the shelf. And it's just so interesting to me that the more quote unquote average looking doll, who was first just the sidekick to the real, more beautiful, stereotypical Barbie, then she moves into this role of doing the most heroic and natural thing on earth, having a baby, but we can't celebrate it. We have to hide it. We have to put her back in her place as the best friend to the doll that we actually want to celebrate, which is the stereotypical Barbie who holds the unrealistic expectations of women. And when I go through all of these thoughts in my brain, whoa, there's so much to unpack here. Like, this movie is just packed full of so many themes that need to be pulled apart. It's actually overwhelming when you think about it. Another really fascinating theme in the movie to me was this mentality of either or between the genders. This was a storyline to follow between Ken and Barbie. And maybe it's fascinating to me because I consider myself to be in a relationship with a man where our gender roles blend in many ways. But in Barbie land, the female ruled all. So Ken was completely forgotten about. He was left to be in Barbie's shadows, where he experiences the idea that there's no real purpose for him other than to be next to Barbie. And then that's flipped on its head when Ken and Barbie enter the real world and roles are completely reversed. It's really interesting to think about this either or, like, where's the in-between? The reality where we all live harmoniously together, focusing on our divine energies, offering both the feminine and the masculine together to create this third world where basically we play to all our strengths. This is deep shit they're tackling, right? And Gerwig actually tackles it in the end where Barbie and Ken have this conversation saying, it's not Barbie and Ken, it's Barbie and it's Ken, right? Or it's Ken and it's Barbie. They're not one, they're their two own individuals. It's really deep shit that this movie tackles. And to be honest, it's masked. I think the aesthetics and the visuals are so overwhelmingly fake, plastic, superficial. And so sometimes that dichotomy of the deep and realness of the film at the same time as the fakeness of the visuals, it was hard for me to blend those two together. I often got distracted by the visuals. But when I really started to unpack it, I realized, whoa, like, there is a lot going on here. Now I want to focus in on a specific line in the film that was said a couple of times over. And it's this line that Barbie says, it's the best day ever. It's the best day ever. Oh, I'm having such a great day. It's the best day ever. And she says it over and over and over again to lots of people in Barbie land when anybody's asking how she's doing. And this is the whole idea of perfection that Barbie can symbolize that I was referring to, right? The fact that in Barbie land, there are no bad days. Everything is great. It's just not representational of true life. And Gerwig has some serious commentary on this, and we see it through, really mostly through Gloria's character, who is someone in the real world who then starts to make these sketches of Barbies that represent human feelings. So the big example is irrepressible thoughts of death Barbie. Gerwig is showing to us how damaging it is to have a doll that represents women who are basically one-dimensional in their feelings and emotions. This idea of just chronic happiness that Barbie supports just further illustrates that societal expectation that women's feelings and needs go on the back burner. They're just supposed to be fine, happy, and really truly skin deep. Like, skin deep when it comes to anything resembling the real emotions that come along with being a woman. It strips us of our true femininity, of our relationship to our hormonal cycles, of what our emotions can actually offer the world for the better. And this is kind of a perfect segue into talking about this monologue that happens towards the end of the movie. It's delivered by America Ferrera, who plays Gloria. And Gloria is this stressed out Mattel employee who's been struggling to connect with her daughter. And she's the one to cause Barbie's existential crisis after playing with her daughter's old Barbie toys, which transfers her fears and worries over to Barbie. Okay, so that's kind of the setup that you need to know. And I'm going to read this monologue for you for those who haven't had the chance to watch the film yet. But I need to preface by saying that Ferrera was actually nominated for an Academy Award for this role. most likely heavily due to this specific monologue, so I'm not going to do it justice. I know that. But what I really want you to do is just listen to the words, okay? So here it is. It's literally impossible to be a woman. You're so beautiful and so smart, and it kills me that you think you're not good enough. Like, we have to always be extraordinary, but somehow we're always doing it wrong. You have to be thin, but not too thin. And you can never say you want to be thin. You have to just say you want to be healthy, but also you have to be thin. You have to have money, but you can't ask for money because that's crass. You have to be a boss, but you can't be mean. You have to lead, but you can't squash other people's ideas. You're supposed to love being a mother, but don't talk about your kids all the damn time. You have to be a career woman, but also always be looking out for other people. You have to answer for men's bad behavior, which is insane. But if you point that out, you're accused of complaining. You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women because you're supposed to be part of the sisterhood. But always stand out and always be grateful, but never forget that the system is rigged. So find a way to acknowledge that, but also always be grateful. You have to never get old, never be rude. Never show off, never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, never get out of line. It's too hard. It's too contradictory and nobody gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault. I'm just so tired of watching myself and every single other woman tie herself into knots so that people will like us. And if all of that is also true for a doll just representing women, then I don't even know. Whew, end quote. I mean, brilliant writing, brilliant delivery by America Ferrera. But whoa, just whoa. I feel like this monologue embodies the heart of what most modern women are probably experiencing in some way, whether it's conscious or subconscious. It shows us all that the expectations of women are totally unrealistic, just like those of Barbie. And the only true way to navigate through it all, friends, it's just to be true to yourself and to let go of the expectations that anyone else puts on you. This also shows us that it's not only men that put these expectations on us, but we as women put them on ourselves too. And that's a really important part of it to realize, because if we can admit to seeing that, then we can also feel the control and the power to be able to start showing up in a different way so that we can be the ones to start changing it for ourselves too. The paling we experience as women can sometimes creep in when we're not focusing enough on what brings us joy, what makes us feel aligned with our own values, our own beliefs, our own desires. Similarly to Barbie's role in the movie, we can be the advocates for ourselves to change this. You know, obviously there's a bigger picture here of all of society getting on board, but it can start with us, because when we start to show up in the way that we want to, we're showing, especially the next generation, how to do that too. We're modeling it for them. And Barbie was the character in the movie that made that change for herself. She was the one that broke the cycle. She had to lean into the uncomfort, into her, you know, quote unquote, malfunction as a Barbie. And maybe the same is true for us. Margot Robbie as Barbie leads the way in the film. She does it herself, and she does this. I think the moment we really truly realize the like switch in her that goes off is during the box scene. So if you haven't seen it, basically she arrives at Mattel in hopes of someone helping her with her malfunction, thinking, okay, these people are going to be the people to help me. They created me. They must know. But instead, she runs into an exec team of crazy, ridiculous men who quite literally just tell her, get back in your box. Get back in your box. If you just get back in that box, we will take you to where you're supposed to be. So get back in your box, Barbie. It's a life-size box. Like, it's crazy. It's a life-size box that Margot Robbie steps into. And it's also a life-size metaphor for the notion that women, we need to comply. So they can take her back to where she belongs, right? And they even bring out the so-called, I don't know, like, for lack of a better term, shackles that go around Barbie's wrists in the box to like secure her to the box. There's so many really great visuals. And here's the interesting part. She gets into the box willingly at first, She even addresses how warm and familiar it is to her. Like, oh, I haven't been here in a while. That smell is familiar to me. But she quickly catches herself. She realizes that she's the only one that can actually decide if she's going back into that box or not. So she decides no, she frickin' runs. She forges a new path, even without knowing exactly how it's all gonna unfold. And then one of my favorite scenes that comes at the end of the movie is with Ruth Handler, who's the inventor, the actual real life inventor. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's played by, now I should fact check that, but Ruth Handler is portrayed by somebody else in the movie. And this scene with her creator, basically, is all based around Barbie's lack of identity, her lack of sense of identity now. She explains to Ruth that she's not really sure what she's supposed to do now. If she's not who she's always been, then who is she? She was made for a purpose, but if that purpose has now been outgrown, then who is she? And Ruth, her creator, takes her hand and quite literally brings her to a place in between, a place where she explains she actually doesn't have an ending, one where she's evolving constantly. Maybe all the things that made her her aren't actually her. And Barbie later says this to Ken at the very end of the film. That's such a powerful message. Maybe all the things that make you you aren't actually you. Isn't that such a beautiful thing to realize, to allow ourselves to evolve over time, to step into different versions of ourselves, greater versions of ourselves, truer versions of ourselves than we once were? The ability to discover who we are at the core that doesn't rely on any outside source. That maybe we create our identity at first around what others expect of us, but that something in us might be missing. And that redefinition of ourselves as humans has to take place. It's inevitable. And if we want something different, we don't actually have to ask for it. We just need to discover we are it, whatever that is. So in the end, Gloria, who is the Mattel employee who starts sketching more realistic types of Barbies, and that's what causes this huge malfunction and this existential crisis in Barbie, this character Gloria ends up suggesting in the end just an ordinary Barbie. That's what they call it, ordinary Barbie. And I think it's so brilliant because here's the deal. We've discussed this here at the Joyful Flamingo. Your identity should not be wrapped up in your accolades, in your career, in your looks. Your identity is just you. You don't have to be a vet to feel successful. You don't have to be the doctor or the totally hair Barbie or have a certain look to you or, you know, certain medals given to you. Like, you just have to be you, ordinary you. And that is your superpower. Here's the deal. The thing I loved most about this movie is that there is no resolution for Barbie. It doesn't get tied up in a perfect bow. She basically leaves Barbie land, enters the real world, and it doesn't show her being crazy successful or fitting in just perfectly. It doesn't show much of anything. It just is kind of a hint to us that, you know, we make choices to put ourselves on the best path possible each and every day. And we'll basically continue to do just that until the end of time. And there was something so simplistically beautiful to me about that message. Ruth says to Barbie, "We mothers stand still so that our daughters can look back to see how far they've come." I was looking into it. There are so many interpretations of this line in the movie all over the internet. But for me, this is what I feel about that line. So let me repeat it. "We mothers stand still so that our daughters can look back to see how far they've come." For me, this line is twofold. The mother standing still piece of it, it didn't necessarily jive with me because I feel like it could perpetuate this mentality that when we become mothers, we freeze in time and we stop going after the things that we believe in as humans, which is not what we want. We want to model for our children what it looks like to fight for what we believe in so that we can potentially create space for them to journey along that path with us simultaneously, even if it's for different beliefs. Two powerful generations going after what they want at the same time, pushing movement doubly forward. It also, this line shows the unconditional love we have for our daughters, the hope we hold for them when they go out into this world where they might not always be welcomed. and where they have to create something for themselves and for others. It's this idea of, you know, allowing them to forge even further ahead than us, giving them the foundation, showing them how to do it so that they can go even further than we did to keep things moving forward. It's this beautiful, never-ending line of women progressing over time. So overall, basically, I just have no way to wrap up and summarize how I feel about Barbie now. I may be even more confused about her than I was before. And I feel like, I really truly feel like you need to watch the movie another like 10 times in a row to fully grasp every theme that they tackled. And I bet you the second and third and fourth time that I watch it, I'll catch something different. I maybe even will have a different opinion because there's so much to unpack. Like, it really is overwhelming. Right now, it just still feels pretty mucky in my mind. Like, it's like this crazy dichotomy. It's like that monologue. It's like, be this and that, do this and that. And it's a crazy, overwhelming dichotomy. So it feels still pretty mucky in my mind. When I was talking to my mama about it this week, she said something poignant to me. And she said that at least now the questions are being asked. And really, that's the most important movement, right? It's not necessarily about answering the questions right now. It's about posing them in the first place. We haven't been posing them. And that's the step that we all need to start taking. So listen, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. I'd love to hear some of the Flockies' viewpoints on the film if you have seen it or if you do see it this week. There's a lot to dissect. There's a lot to think about, and clearly, there's a lot for us to do. We need to keep having the conversations, keep asking the questions, keep showing up in the most authentic version of ourselves at our core. But for right now, just know that I am so grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you for being part of the Joyful Flamingo Flock. Until next time. Just a reminder, Flamingo Flock, that I am not a medical or psychological professional. Each one of my episodes has been inspired by my own experience and journey through life and is brought to you through my own opinions and lens. Any suggestions or advice offered here do not substitute proper conversations with your own healthcare professionals for either your physical or mental well-being.